Hi, I'm Madison Williams with Oklahoma Humanities, here to talk with Dr. Benjamin Bates about his experience with the organization and his history with the humanities. So, to go ahead and start off, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I retired in spring of 2019 after 23 years as a member of the faculty at Langston University. I taught English, mostly composition, also some literature and other stuff like that. I also taught theater for a long time. I was a theater guy at Langston, and we did plays and stuff like that. My best professional involvement was with the National Writing Project, and more specifically with the Oklahoma State University Writing Project, which is, I'll explain what it is. It's an organization for teachers. It's a nationwide organization for teachers devoted to the teaching of writing. We feel that writing instruction should be central to just about the whole educational enterprise, and that there hasn't been sufficient attention paid to that particular skill and how it both relates and facilitates other skills that people develop while they're supposed to be learning stuff. Anyway, I did a lot of stuff with the National Writing Project for a long time, and the reason I mention that is because the Oklahoma State University Writing Project director is a former member of Oklahoma Humanities. She recommended me, and that was how I got involved and came and interviewed me at Langston, and that was how I got involved with Oklahoma Humanities. After a long time working with the National Writing Project, and asked me to join, and I went, and I thought it was great. I guess the thing, talking about my experience with the humanities, I had to study, and I'm still not good on this. I had to really try to memorize, and I guess I haven't actually done it. I tried to memorize the disciplines that we include under the humanities, things like jurisprudence and language and stuff like that. For some reason, I just can't get the whole list straight. But anyway, I did look it up, and I made sure that. And the thing that I've sort of learned more from being a member of the board than what I knew before is how, I guess I'm just going to call it ignorance because I can't think of a better word, but how ignorant the general public is about issues that really concern the general public, and how unaware most people are of history and the people who have shaped our present culture, I guess I'll say it like that. And so th well, now here's my camera. What do you know? And so the need to share that information with a larger audience, which is what Oklahoma Humanities, that's our mission. But I subscribed to that and subscribed to that before I even knew what Oklahoma Humanities was. And I guess I'm sort of drifting now. So I guess that's enough of an answer to a fairly short and direct question. What's next? That's how I got involved with Oklahoma Humanities.
So what did you do while you were on Oklahoma Humanities? What was your role?
Okay, my role. Wow, that's a good question. I guess I should say, I'm about to rotate off of the humanities now. I don't know whether they've told you that. But I sent a note to Caroline a few weeks ago that I was thinking about getting off. And it's been very good for me. I'm not sure I've really contributed very much. Like, okay, so I just wanted to participate, I guess, is my first way to answer that question. And the things that I've done that have been very interesting to me, first, I got involved with some Let's Talk About It, Oklahoma. The group is here in Guthrie, where I live. I just came as a participant a couple of times, And since that time, I've led a couple of those Let's Talk About It Oklahoma things, but I did one on what's the name, the Help, at Oklahoma City University. I guess it was about a year. No, I guess it's, yeah, about a year ago, before the pandemic hit in. And so I've been involved with Let's Talk About It, and I really, because we're usually talking about, I don't know that this is the intention, but it seems like that to me. But we're talking about historically based fiction most of the time, but books that sort of raise that well, no, I'll put it more positive, that reduce the level of misinformation and uninformation among just normal everyday people. I have really enjoyed doing that as a member of Oklahoma Humanities. The thing that I've done myself, we now I can't, oh, you're gonna have to help me with the name of this. My memory is not very good. The thing, didn't we have an in we had a citywide, region-wide, statewide conference sort of thing, whose name I forget. In the spring of 2018, info something or other, I forget what it's called. Anyway, I wrote a letter at that time, and this is one of those areas where people are, where I think people are mostly misinformed or uninformed. I did a session at this conference sponsored by Oklahoma Humanities at the Civic Center Music Hall. A while back, so you can probably look up to get the name, but I can't think of the name for the life of me. Anyway, but anyway, I did a session at this conference on Oklahoma's lynching history, the history of lynching in this state. There is a group called the Equal Justice Initiative that has a museum, I guess that's what it's called, in Montgomery, Alabama, that includes an exhibition dedicated to victims of lynching. And they've done some research on this topic over the last, I guess EGI has been doing this in maybe about a decade now. And they have this map of documented or semi-documented, or however you want to label these events. And anyway, it turns out that there are 76 lynchings that have occurred in the state of Oklahoma during the lynching era, I'll put it like that. And that issue has been really a lifelong thing for me. And it just, again, it just reinforces how much people don't know, I guess I'll just say it like that, how much people don't know about their own history, I guess I'd put it. That's particular example does, and I guess that is what I'm trying to say. And that my sense of what Oklahoma Humanities was to do is to combat that, is to inform the uninformed or the misinformed, and to expand our sense of what are really, and I know I'm sounding negative, but I really don't. We have a Oklahoma, for example, has a great and glorious history. Really, I've lived here 20, it'll be 25 years, and 25 years. This August is when we moved here in 1996, and I didn't know any of Oklahoma's history when I moved down here, but I moved to work at a historically Black college, Langston, and I've learned a lot of history since, and it's a great and glorious history with a lot of racial incidents and overtones and issues. I mean, this is the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Riot. Oklahoma is just full of events and people who have shaped That whole movement, the movement to expand human rights, that has been that people usually associated with the 60s or something like that, and that's an example of misinformation or underinformation, because this stuff has been going on for years and years and hundreds of years, and there have been a lot of characters to step forward during that time. And again, my sense of what we're supposed to do as Oklahoma Humanities is to, you know, sort of uncover or discover or recover a lot of these events and people that have been, you know, sort of marginalized to start and ignored in the aftermath, and lynching really for me is a good example of that. But okay, I forget what the question was, so maybe I'll stop and let you ask another one now. How about that?
You mentioned that, you know, Oklahoma Humanities, you know, serves to uncover this history and teach this history. What programs do they teach it through? You mentioned that conference in 2018.
Yeah.
But is there any other programs that, you know, are relatively continuous that help teach that history?
All of our programs do. Let's talk about it, Oklahoma. That's another one. Museum on Main Street is another one. Our podcasting show is another one. Staff who work to sponsor these programs, all of them have a real interest in this area and in spreading this information. I can give you the example that I'm working on now. It relates back to what I've talked about before. 1911, a woman was lynched in Okemo. There is a festival every year in Okemo that celebrates the legacy of Woody Guthrie. Now again, this is all history that I did not know myself until I found it out in the last year or so. But anyway, turns out that Woody Guthrie was born a year after this lynching took place. And this particular lynching, there's a famous photograph of this lynching, and it was circulated in the areas of Okemo. And Woody Guthrie actually wrote songs about people being hung from the bridge and so on and so forth. And so again, I can talk about the effect of Oklahoma Humanities by what we do is, in addition to our own programs, we support conferences like the Woody Guthrie Festival. And these are programs that are spread out throughout the state of Oklahoma. And really they are all, really, I would say, universally all dedicated to that focus of spreading this information that has been overlooked and ignored, and at our expense. You know, we would, like I said, I think Oklahoma's history is great and glorious, but it would be even better if we acknowledge some of these incidents that we consider, you know, embarrassing or disruptive or whatever label you want to put on it. We just ignore it. We stop talking about them, and I think we should talk about them. And Oklahoma Humanities is central to that. This gets people talking. I think the first thing, I joined Oklahoma Humanities, and the first, you know, what kind of activities do we program? What kind of activity do we sponsor? And I went to a film at a synagogue, and I, you know, I'm terrible with names, and I should remember some of these names, but there's a synagogue, it's in Oklahoma City, somewhere in the north 50s or something like that. Anyway, it's a film series about a relationship between an Israeli and a Palestinian, and the film was shot in the Middle East and so on. And so that was the first activity that I just went because I was a member of the board, and just to sit around and listen to people talk about that stuff. You know, I'm getting, I'm an old guy. That's another reason I'm getting off the board. But the older I get, the more I think of just those programs, those occasions where people get to sit around and talk about some of these issues, like the ones we're talking about right now, that, you know, just we'd rather ignore them. It's easier to ignore them. It's better if we don't. And one of the things that I would say about Oklahoma Humanities is that they've helped me get out of, well, helped me get out of that rut of just accepting the easy way out in regard to issues like this. I mentioned a few of our programs, but one of our, I would say, maybe our greatest service to Oklahoma is to fund other people's programs. And I've served on our grant committee off and on while I've been on the board. And again, just to read the proposals, you know, there's the diversity of interest. We funded things at the Cowboy Museum. We funded Native American projects. I remember one coming out of Tahlequah a couple of years. And just to read the proposals and see the resumes and all of that different kind of stuff, you know, it's valuable. And that's what Oklahoma Humanities does.
So Oklahoma Humanities really serves to elevate, you know, underserved communities, you know, Black communities, Native Americans, and elevate them through grants and facilitating these discussions about our history.
I think so. You know, we could do more. And I will say, though, that again, you meet people when you get on these boards, and I've been impressed that the people who are in positions of authority in Oklahoma Humanities, they believe in diversity and social justice and all of that good stuff, and really, and you can always do more, and you can always do better, and you can always involve more people. But, you know, I think they are working, doing good things with regard to social justice. That's what I think.
So you mentioned that, you know, you could be doing more. What do you feel like you're not doing in the organization? You know, how do you feel like you could do more?
I think mostly that's, I don't think there's anything the organization can do. I describe this. Okay, I got involved on this lynching thing, and I really did sort of set a goal for myself to address this 1911 lynching, to do something about the woman who was that photograph. And I worked with a couple of people, not members of the board, but other people who had expressed some interest on a proposal that we were working on to have a research project based in the high school in Okemo, using Okemo teachers and so on to sort of look into this happened in their history. So I went through the grant proposal process, and I don't think I handled the grant proposal process well. That's what I said. There's nothing the organization can do. I think I fell down as an individual getting that thing together in a timely fashion. It wasn't together, but to my satisfaction, in time for the proposal deadlines and stuff like that. And then the pandemic happened, and schools closed down. And so the whole, really, from my point of view, the whole approach that we were going to take was sort of rendered obsolete by events. And I spent that last year, you know, obviously we can't work through the schools to do this. I guess, again, I would say that my experience on humanities has been positive. If I had, the more that I could have done, I want to make this woman, her name is Laura Nelson. You can look her up. You can look up the photograph. All of this stuff is true. I want to make her a hero. The Equal Justice Initiative has this little program where they erect like a little monument at the site of the lynching, and they gather soil from the site of the lynching and so on and so forth. And it commemorates something that we have sort of swept under the rug. And okay, and so this is just to answer your question. People at Oakland have been very helpful with the proposal process that I tried to go through and just didn't deliver. They've given me names of people at the Woody Guthrie Festival to contact, which is something that I'm working on now, and I just haven't finished. But to get back to your question, I want to do this. I would like to see this woman, Laura Nelson, in the museum in Montgomery, Alabama, as part of their display for victims of lynching. And I would like to see a historical marker recognizing the event at the site of the lynching and stuff like that. And I haven't done those things, and I'm sort of rotating off. I would say it's been nobody. I mean, it was a privilege that I was asked to join this board, and I didn't know, really, you never know what you're getting into, and I found a way that I could, you know, sort of pursue this interest of mine, and it hasn't really worked out the way that I would like it to. So that's, again, just back to answering your question, because I haven't given up on this thing. But there's nothing really Oklahoma Humanities could have done that they didn't do. And I asked them for things, they gave me those things. They've helped me where I've needed help. And I don't think this is really a good answer to your question, because what we're looking for is ways that the organization might shift its practices or something like that. And I'm not really giving you that, but my experience, the practice, the operation is open. We accept all kinds of proposals. And if you handle your business right, which I didn't quite do, they usually come through for you. So that's been my experience. I really feel Caroline Griswold is a perfect new director. I like all of her ideas. I don't think I can really contribute that much to the fundraising aspect of raising money for Oklahoma Humanities. I don't think I have those resources, but I support her. And so none of that really answers your question. So maybe I should just stop talking. Why don't we go on to another question?
No, that's a great answer. You mentioned that we just finished talking about, you know, things that the organization could be doing more. Yeah. But what have we done so far to get to the point that we're at? You know, how have they benefited these communities so far?
Just raising the issues is the only thing that I can say right now. There's a lot. Well, yes, there not. There's been a lot of misunderstanding about the phrase Black Lives Matter. The whole response, White Lives Matter too, or All Lives Matter too, all of that is a misunderstanding of what is intended by what I think is intended by the phrase Black Lives Matter. We as a country have operated for a long time without regard for the real impact on the community that some of our, like our criminal justice practices have in the Black community. We look at the people who are incarcerated, yes, and there's too many of them, but they all have families. They all had things that they were engaged in before they went into jail, and all of that stuff gets impacted too. And our approach to these things has been sort of narrow-minded. And what the Black Lives Matter is saying is that, yes, the people who are incarcerated matter, but the lives that they affect matter as well. And when we are considering the cost of these practices, we have to consider all of that stuff because all of these Black lives matter. And so the response that, you know, well, white lives matter and all lives matter, that's a non sequitur to what the people were saying about Black Lives Matter. That's just a misunderstood response. And, you know, I guess it's an understandable misunderstood response, but it's misunderstood. And so all you can do really is act as if these people's lives do matter. And again, when I say I think we've done pretty good work as far as social justice is, that's what I'm talking about. We act as if these lives matter. And, not so much that you have to correct past wrongs or any of that. Really what you want in society is for people to just start acting differently, start acting like Black Lives Matter. There are things that we have to look back on in history, but if we just started acting like Black Lives Matter, you know, a lot of things would improve just by that change in our perspective. And the way to change that perspective is what we've been talking about for the last hour, which is just get some people together and let's talk about these things. The extent that Oklahoma Humanities does that, it should be praised.
So how have the humanities really impacted your life personally to get you to this point?
Wow. Okay, I'm old. So this thing, like, I saw that photograph of Lauren Nelson hanging from the bridge over, what river is that? I can't think of the name of the river now. Anyway, it's the river near Okemo. I saw that picture when I was in college, when I was an undergraduate, when I was probably about your age, or something like that. I didn't know I'd ever moved to Oklahoma or any of that kind of stuff then. But what I'm thinking now, and I hesitate to think this because it'd be a nice little sort of poetic life journey to see that picture as a college student and do something about that woman's look. Like right now, Lauren Nelson, all we know about her is that they hung her. And she was a person. Her life mattered. You know what I mean? I would like to do something to recognize that life. And, you know, she didn't get a funeral. She didn't, you know, none of the thing. Like, I just saw this thing on the New Yorker website yesterday or the day before about a guy who survived a lynching and is now, he's an artist, and the whole video was about the effect of this lynching on his life and his artwork and so forth. And just the terrorism that lynching represented in our culture for so long. Anyway, it would be nice, I would say, if these things happen that I've been talking about, I would be an interesting thing to achieve. And if I don't do it, I guess I'll probably die anyway. But that's okay. But now I forgot what your question. What more is there that I can do? You know, I'd like to finish that project that I sort of started on when I became a member of Oklahoma Humanities, really. Because I really didn't, get started on this until I realized there was grant money there and started doing a little research and stuff. So, yeah, I'd like to finish that. But I still don't think I'd be a good member of the board. So that's why I'm rotating off. The other thing I think, and this has come to me being a retired person, I really do think that people have to get out of the way and let younger people try things, do things, make mistakes, whatever it is that we're going to do. You know, because you had your turn, and you know, it's time for you to move on. And so all of that is mixed up in this, but I have some unfinished work to do. So that's, you know, we'll keep going for a while.
So while working for Oklahoma Humanities and being on the board, have you been able to, you know, create new relationships and gain new perspectives, you know, from your fellow board members?
I'd say that my performance in that area has not been good. I can name a couple of people that I think I have good relationships with, but I don't know. I haven't done well in that area. I just say like that. Another one of the reasons that I was, I'll give you an example. The last board meeting that we had, and the thing is, what I really do believe that a big part of being productive is just showing up. You just have to be there and be present when decisions are being made. And at the last board meeting, not attend the last board meeting, because that was the same day that I got my second COVID shot. And I had gone through, I had been through some changes to get that thing set up, and it was set up on the same day when the board meeting, so I didn't want to miss my appointment, so I skipped the meeting. That sort of thing bothers me, and it's not the first time that this happened for me, and that was one of the reasons that I wrote Caroline that note. And really, if you show up, usually your relationships work out really well with the other people that you're working with, because he'll show up. That's usually a good way to get off on the good foot with your fellow board members or whoever it is that you're socializing with. And that hasn't been the case with me. So, I feel like I haven't done that well in that.
So then I guess, you know, you mentioned that you weren't, you know, super involved with your other board members, but, you know, going the opposite direction, do you feel like, you know, especially when you first got on the board, you were able to bring a fresh perspective?
I think so. Yeah. Well, you know, that's one of those things you have to accept. I couldn't answer that. They would have to say that about, that's something that you want people to say about you. You don't want to say that about yourself. I think so, but I don't know.
Okay. So you mentioned that you were occasionally working on grants. How much impact did these grants have on other organizations?
Okay. Here's an area where maybe we could do a little bit. Our involvement with grant recipients, it might be tweaked in certain ways. As far as, like, all right. So let's look at a hypothetical situation. Let's look at the grant proposal that I wrote. We needed, at a couple of occasions, we needed a couple of more contacts, because, you know, I had an idea, but it took a lot of coordination to get it together, and during that, it would have been good if someone from the organization was consulting with us on that. To me, that sounds like a lot of work, and it probably is a lot of work. And there are every grant cycle, there are at least a half a dozen or maybe a dozen different organizations who are competing for this money. And the point that I was going to make about mine, I think that's a good idea, a fundable idea. But the thing about this is, there are at least about a dozen of these every cycle that are really, you know, that's a good idea to be funded. And so probably there is more as far as pre-consultation that members of the staff could do with people who have ideas, which is, you know, what we're talking about. And then once the funds have been awarded and the programs have been established, again, one of the things that they've asked board members to do is to attend the programs, go and watch and observe and learn and stuff like that. We could probably do a better job of that. I certainly think I could have done a better job of that. But okay, that's one level of involvement once the program gets started. There are other levels of involvement. And again, it would really sort of depend on just how much time you wanted to give this honorary position, because there are lots of people out there with ideas, and cultivating those ideas, nourishing the people with those ideas and all that kind of stuff. I think we could probably do a better job of that, but it would be a big job. That much, it would be it would take a major commitment. And I'm not sure, maybe I had that commitment. I'm not sure, just thinking back to the meetings that I did go to and sitting around the table, how many people were sitting would have been willing to consult, to use the word I've been using, consult with grant recipients and so on and so forth on an ongoing basis, pre-application and post-funding. That's a lot of work that we're asking people to do. And while in our reporting about impact, like the kind of question that you're asking, it would help to answer those questions, but it would take a lot of work. That's what I think, anyway. Well, getting it done is a big job.
So, you know, board members don't get to interact with grant recipients that much, right? But you know, that's a huge commitment. And if they make that huge commitment, maybe there wouldn't be as much grant recipients. So it's kind of a either or situation, right?
Like, I think that's true.
You're able to reach more people with grants with the current system.
Yeah, but then that's the thing. But we're always talking about, well, who are we not reaching? Who's not at the table? What sorts of programs are we in our you know, sort of comfortable biases, just sort of ignoring and overlooking? I mean, it's a fair question. And again, I don't want to suggest in any way that we're not doing a good job now. But if to increase the impact of our grant giving, approach it from a general way like that, would take a more intensive hands-on sort of consultation process than we have right now. I think that's true. And you might not be able to work with a large number of grant applicants in that way. If you started working in that way and word got around about that, you'd never want for grant applicants either. That's what I think.
Okay. So just to bring it out to a little bit of a bigger picture, what do you think the overall value of the humanities is? You know, why are they so important? You know, we talked about it educates people on history that people don't know about, but is there any other reasons?
Well, we can take it, go all the way back to the basics. Like, I think people should read. Like, here's what I am a language arts teacher, have been for a long time. And how can I put this? The value, when you learn to read something, or when you learn about something, when you learn about this lynching that took place in 1911 or whatever it is, and you can digest the documents that you're going to, you know, all the checks that you're going to work with, and you get information, you're extracting information from that text. This will as much show my limitations as it does my profundity, but that's the whole human experience. I think learning about what has come before also, and when you learn about that, you want to share some of your experience. So engaging in that discourse, that's life. You know, I think, and so when I used to teach, and people would have, we would have arguments about giving someone a failing grade, and the problem is that the system has it set up so that every cycle there's a pass or a fail. But really, all you're asking people to do is here, read this, or here, read this and tell me what you think and write about what you think about. That's pretty much in any discipline. They're going to give you some stuff to read. I don't know what your major is or what you majored in college, but they gave you some books to read and asked you to write and talk about them. That's in every discipline. That's what they do. So I guess my big picture look is that, you know, I'm involved with Oklahoma Humanities because the Oklahoma Humanities is engaged in that big process, in the exchange of discourse from sources, infinite sources. You know, everybody, you know, there's this idea that the more voices you have, the better choir you have, and you're always trying to add voices to your choir. And I think Oklahoma Humanities is involved in that. And I don't see how you get much bigger than that, than being engaged in humane work, in the work, in the exchange of ideas between people. To me, that's as big as it gets.
Okay, I think that's about all that I have for you today. Is there anything else you would like to say?
No, I don't think so. You know, you got me thinking about some things, but you know, I'll be fine. you've made me recommit to this Lauren Nelson thing, and somehow I'm going to make that happen. And Oklahoma Humanities will have played a big role in it, and that'll be good for me and for Oklahoma Humanities and for Oklahoma and for a lot of people, I think. And again, I'm all inclusive, and how can I say? All inclusive, because this process, what we just went through, is part of this. You know, when they do this thing for Lauren Nelson, this will be part of the process that made that happen, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. It sure was a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's fun for me too.
Mm-hmm. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye.